official home of the Canucks.
Dinky Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back, Vic and the Boss. Vic Nazar, Craig McEwen, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Text in 650-650 if you've got thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. You can chime in with whatever you want. Review of the show. We love those ones. Or just your thoughts on what Jim Benning and Bo Horvat had to say when they met earlier today. I referenced it there with Ian McIntyre as well. Just some comments Elliot Friedman made when he joined the Fan 960. I'll play them back here with C-Mac. And I want to get your impressions here as well, C-Mac, of just what this all means, right? Because leading up into today, and, you know, Jim Benning and Bo Horvat, you know, outlined of how they, you know, survived to get to this moment and what of getting ready for these games now. It's all been about getting your head above water.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's a difficult scenario. How do you recover? How do you get ready? Where we go from after this is what's going to be really interesting, right? Like, what are the ramifications and what are the things that are learned and what are the glass half full here, what are the opportunities that present themselves after you go through this? And here's what Elliot Friedman had to say of, will all this for the Canucks lead to more change?
You know, the fact that Miller went public like that, obviously it says to me that he's probably not the only one. I wouldn't be surprised if Miller kind of did it because he's a blunt guy and he knew he wouldn't be afraid of saying like things like that on behalf of his teammates. I just wonder, you know, where's this all going to go? Is it going to lead to any more change? Is it going to, are players unhappy? Is the organization unhappy? I just think that we're still seeing where this is going to unfold. And, you know, I had another coach call me last week and say, you know, he thought that the Canucks had a moral obligation to extend their coaches now. And, you know, I don't know how everybody there feels about that. I don't know how the coaches feel about that. You look at the trauma of the past couple weeks there, and you wonder what it could mean for the way some of the choices that everybody there is going to have to make and how to proceed in the future.
And so this is the backdrop in which they will negotiate two of the most important contracts of, you know, the next 5 years in Pettersson and Hughes, what those second deals look like. Wow.
You know, I think it's, you know, like the world is not an ideal place, Ryan, right now. It's a challenge. You know, Pettersson's been hurt. We don't know when he's going to play or if he's going to play the rest of this year. You know, I just think that, you know, anyone listening to this can think about the strain that this has caused in their own lives and their own businesses, right? I just look at, you know, what I just can't imagine that going through that. Like, I don't know if Pettersson feels differently. I don't know if Hughes feels differently. I don't know if the organization feels differently. I just, you can't help but look at the past couple of weeks and say, okay, like, we've been through a lot here. What does it all mean? And I don't think we know all the answers to those questions yet. I have no doubt that the Canucks want to extend Hughes and Pettersson. They've blocked a segment of their cap space to do it, somewhere around $15 million. I don't think that changes at all, Ryan. I just think that I think the organization's been through a lot, and we'll see what that means.
That's Elliot Friedman when he joined Boomer and Pinder in the morning in Calgary at Fan 960. And, you know, just, I don't know if we're going to have the answers of that sort of stuff today, C-Mac. It just where this could all go as you try to, you know, debrief from the scenario, if you're looking at this from ownership's perspective and whatnot, is, okay, we dealt with the situation, now what do we learn from it? And what's the direction of the franchise after all of this? And I do think that's an interesting thing to ask when you consider, hey, the the coach is unsigned and all this sort of stuff. Is could more of what this situation as it developed come from it?
Yeah, it's interesting to me the idea of a moral obligation to, you know, give the coaching staff a new contract. The funny thing is, Bick, you know, morality and sports and all that sort of stuff, you see it sometimes where, you know, Craig Cunningham has a terrible accident and the Coyotes give him a scouting job and right. continue his career, right, in that scenario. In this one, you know, I'm not questioning Elliot's source or person who told it to him. In this one, the word moral obligation might be a little bit too strong, but I do honestly believe the coaching staff has done well enough to come back. The coaching staff deserves to return this year, but to tie the moral side of it is, listen, this year to me almost seems like a do-over or a write-off for the Canucks in the sense of the terrible start, the now the COVID stuff they're going through, condensed schedule. This is just one of those years, like, you know, pro sports where you have a bad game and the coach just says, hey, just throw that in the garbage bucket or whatever. Don't think about that game. Let's just turn the page to the next one. This to me seems like it's a turning of the page to next year. The interesting thing, though, as Elliot pointed out, is what next year looks like. And to your point of what you're bringing in, what we learn and how we grow and go through this, like it's still my prediction that the coaches will be back. But I guess in pro sports, unfortunately for people, there are no certainties.
Yeah, and you know, we were trying to sparse the words that Bo Horvat was trying to use earlier. I think Elliot was far more careful in what he was trying to say there. And that to me is open to interpretation for us, rather than being like, oh, someone misunderstood the question and went off on their own thing. To me, it's, yeah, the coaching thing is really important and really fascinating, because from a job evaluation, and you know, we've talked about this over and over again, I've said Travis Green has earned another contract. Forget deserves or moral obligation, has earned another contract to remain as the Vancouver Canucks head coach. But where you're just dealing, this is talking about there of, hey, this is kind of a write-off season. This is kind of a burn-the-tape season. And I do think from, you can look at that and say, hey, this is what's happened. Let's just burn the tape and move over. There is the element, though, that did they approach the season in that way and say, this is kind of a write-off year. How much investment should we put into this? And then it's actually gone far worse than anyone could have imagined. And is this a moment where you can kind of reset and do kind of an audit and figure out what works, what doesn't? And now that we're regrouping after this pandemic, or on the tail end of the pandemic, I should say, how do we reevaluate how we dedicate our time and our attention to building out this entire team? And is this an opportunity? Like, is this the opportunity to make change and kind of reset the slate for with everyone?
Listen, I don't think in pro sports you ever have a perfect time to do some of that, but you're bang on when you say this is the moment to kind of reevaluate and go through all these sort of things. And we don't know what the owner is thinking, but we do know that there wasn't a want or desire or a push to spend a ton of money at the beginning of the year, because they're like, hey, maybe in their crystal ball, when they looked at things, they said, best case scenario, we get back in the playoffs, we make a run for the Cup. Worst case scenario, it goes something like this. And I believe it's worse than anyone would ever thought, now that this COVID situation has come into play. So you could definitely say, hey, let's reevaluate, let's retool. The idea, though, of it being a COVID situation, being a pandemic, it is so hard. And you know, this isn't me sucking up to my bosses in Toronto or Rogers in general, but guys like Joe Natale and Jordan Banks, leaders at our company, have kept us going. They kept us on the air. They didn't furlough anyone when sports died about a year ago, and we were all sitting around going, what are we going to talk about? And I would say that might have been their moral obligation to keep their employees happy, to they got money and made sure that we were all paid and all that sort of stuff. But bottom line, when it comes to the idea of pro sports and the cold, hard, cutthroat business that it is, that, you know, you get cut or you're thrown out the door when you can't perform, that's where it gets tricky. And I do believe the Canucks are going to do a whole audit and reevaluate and reshape things. But the easiest thing, in my opinion, for them to do is just like status quo. Let's keep going. And, you know, this was just a terrible year all around.
If there was ever a sentiment of, hey, let's just hold the line and reevaluate in the offseason and we'll take care of everyone when finances and all that sort of picture changes, and then you see what's happened this year of COVID and all the sort of things, and maybe you don't feel as steady with the direction of the going. Now, if something changed in reversing course, I can understand from, hey, moral obligation, and you said you're going to do one thing and maybe you could take care of us in the offseason. That's very unfair for the coaches to have to share the brunt of that. To say, hey, we came into the season on the impression that maybe at the end of the year when the financial picture cleared up, we would get taken care of. And if something's changed in that regard, like that,
yeah.
When we're talking about changing the future, like that's what I look at is who are the people in your leadership roles, your most important roles, and that's president, that's VP, that's GM, AGM, that's coach, that's assistant coaches. If there is an understanding that, hey, just hold the line this year, and it's gone worse than they thought, and they said, hey, maybe there's an opportunity for us to reevaluate everything in the franchise, I would feel aggrieved in that scenario, and perhaps that's what's led to what feels like a CJ detail the other day. It feels like things are leading towards a breakup.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that it's going to be a breakup because a lot can happen, but it would be totally unfair to hang this on the coaching staff. Like the idea of this COVID situation, and now what do you have? As Ian McIntyre just said on the other side of before when he's talking to us, like he doesn't expect him to win many games here. And I don't care if you're Scotty Bowman or, you know, the best coach ever in whatever sport, a Bill Belichick, if he could coach hockey, you can only get so much out of what you have. And what the Canucks have is a crappy hand being dealt to them right now. They have players that they're calling up, young guys that we're hoping, I guess, as Canuck fans to see, but that leads me to believe that some of the old, more reliable guys aren't ready to go because of how terrible the situation is with them with COVID. That how can you hang this on the coaching staff? And hey, ownership or business owners, I guess, don't need an excuse to reevaluate, and they should always be looking to make things better and improve the cycle of things. But yeah, you can't hang this on a coaching staff of all the bad things that have gone on. And morality, if they were promised something at the beginning of the year, like, let's just ride this out, it's going to be a tough year, and then we'll take care of things in the summer. You know, that's where maybe it's more of a moral obligation. But I just know in my experience in life is that unless it's in writing, unless it's on paper, things can change and things can be justified. Like, hey, sorry, we didn't see this coming, but we're going to do X now.
Bick Nazar and Craig McEwen here, Bick and the boss. Brinsley texts in. It all comes back to a simple fact. Jim Benning and John Weisbrod bad at their jobs and are ill-equipped to lead a modern organization, not only in the hockey side, but more so the organizational side. They need to be relieved of their jobs, 4 years overdue, and bring in proper professionals in the numbers required. That's the bottom line. Fire Benning. And it leads into the other conversation, C-Mac. You may have seen this. Some social media campaigns, both pro and against Jim Benning. Some Canucks fans crowdfunding
I'm
the
shocked.
Opportunity.
This is shocking to me, Bick. This is blowing my mind right now. Unbelievable.
Let me finish here. They crowdfunded some money with the intention to. Now I don't think this has been done yet, but with the intention to fly a plane that says "Fire Benning," and then others in support of Jim Benning have also done the same with the intention to do "Thank You, Jim," with some proceeds as well going to for Canucks for Kids. Now, as far as I know, as of right now, none of these have been fulfilled, but their intention is to follow through with these. Now it has led to some conversation. What's right and what's wrong? And here you are talking about you're shocked that this is happening. I will say, like, in the environment of COVID-19 and this pandemic, fans have not had their opportunity to speak their mind. They do so through us by texting in, calling in. But generally speaking, under normal circumstances, they would be paying money to be in the arena and can say whatever they want, whether it's cheers or jeers. They can express their opinions live to the team in person. And if there were, you know, a long losing streak, you would naturally hear fire Benning Chance. If there was a winning streak, you would hear rousing roar of approval. That would all happen. That's been stripped away from the fans nowadays. And I look at this and I say, if they're not spending money on tickets, and we always say fans that spend the money are the people that can judge the team or whatnot, if there's another avenue for fans to spend their money to share their opinions on the team, I say this is fair.
Well, let me give them an A for creativity. It's kind of like the guy who gets the "Will you marry me" sign up there and flies it around town and hopes his
right.
possible bride to be or husband to be is looking at it. But in all reality and in all honesty, in my opinion, the extremes to which some of these fans go to get their voice heard, again, creative. I applaud the effort, but. Yeah, man, like we've got bigger things in the world to do than create banners and fly them around the city. And I hate Jim Benning and all. Listen, the job that Jim Benning has, Travis Green has, Bo Horvat has, it's very public. But, you know, could you imagine someone getting a banner and wanting to say, you know, fire you at your job? So
God, I'd love that.
I don't know. I tend to kind of scoff at this sort of thing. I understand the voice of the fan. I understand that you know, you pay with your paycheck. You'll buy a ticket or you won't buy a ticket. They'll go to the rink. Totally get that. And the cheering, yeah. And when Gary Bettman gets on the stage, everyone boos. And he mm-hmm. kind of has a laugh about it now and he lets it roll off. But, yeah, in this scenario or this case, I just find these two warring factions of and it's split down the middle, and it's humorous to me that it's so polarizing in both directions that this is what they've come up with now is some plane flying over Vancouver during COVID times to try and get rid of someone. And I'm of the opinion they both should just donate the money to help a COVID relief fund or small businesses or something like that.
That's fair, but look. People get to spend. I try to do this thing where I don't tell people how to fan. And
I'm going to tell them how to fan. That's what management does. We tell you what to do. I tell you what your opinion is. We tell you what when to show up.
People,
like, that's what I do.
People get to spend their money as they see fit. And look, I get it. And you wish, I wish I could give more to charity. But sometimes I make bad decisions and I spend money on things I shouldn't. See, Mac, that's just human nature. That is just human nature. And
well,
people,
hey. The Dunbar Lumber text line, I get this one. Get a banner that says SAT free password. Now, that would be a good banner.
Stop it. Stop it. I was going to say, I would love my name to be in the sky. If anyone wants to pay for my name in the sky, that is great publicity for me. So please go right ahead. 650. I love the way you guys bash fans for negativity about a hockey team without realizing you media flakes do the same thing.
Hey, here's a good one on the text line. Wouldn't buying a banner be supporting local business by getting a plane off?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What are you talking about, C-Mac? You're way off here. Vic Nazar and Craig McEwen here. The new COVID update, COVID list has come out. The Canucks are down to two teams now. Two players, Nate Schmidt and Jake Virtanen. So slowly getting back to all the players coming off of the COVID list. We'll deal with that and talk about that plus more. Scott Brown Realty will join us with a couple of stats. And there's a viral tweet going around. I want to throw it by you and all of our listeners. You get to pick one athlete to have an injury-free career from beginning to end. Who are you choosing? Text yours in. We'll got a couple of submissions for ourselves. On the way, picking the boss here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to Bic and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, it'll stab me up. On the way with Scott Brown. We'll get to that in just a minute. Trying to sift through some of these texts here. 650, 650. C-Mac, you're just wrong. If this was European football team, there would have been protest marches over the incompetence of management after year three on a weekly basis. Jim Benning has had it soft. I will say I agree with that. And in general, in North America. I think most coaches and GMs have it much softer than what we see overseas.
Well, look at the newspaper and the press over there. It's crazy how they just go after you. Listen, I love the fact that fans can cheer. I love the fact that they take ownership of their teams. I love the fact they listen to this radio station and consume the sports content that we provide. But I do often marvel at the idea that their opinion is the ultimate decider or what matters. And again, we're all open to our opinions, but bottom line, that those decisions and all that stuff will be made by the Vancouver Canucks, not by the fan base and how loud they're yelling.
But it's a product put on for the fans.
Correct.
That's the thing. Like that's the element. It's a product put on for the fans who have, you know, to your point, who have no say in the outcome of what the product is put forward to them, right? Like, you go to the movie theater, you expect to see a happy ending. You don't go to the arena to assume you're going to win. But when that doesn't happen, you have your right to share your opinion, and that's what's happening here.
You do have your right to share your opinion, but bottom line, does the opinion impact what's done with the organization? And I do believe that, you know, the ownership should look at what the fans are saying. But if that's the sway, or that the public opinion is the thing that makes you make a move, listen, that's not what you do. I can equate this to the fact that I remember when Trevor Linden was hired originally by the Canucks and brought in, and at the time, you know, this was long before Canucks Twitter is what Canucks Twitter is. It felt to me like Rome was burning. The franchise was in shambles. They needed a white knight, someone to come in and solve the problem and give some security. And here's this guy, Trevor Linden, who is, you know, Mr. Canuck. And he did just that. He calmed the waters almost instantaneously. And we didn't hear as much from the fans. We didn't hear that. Nowadays, I don't know what any move would calm the waters because of how vocal and how animated people are on Twitter. And that's their right, to your point, and that's what they should do. But that's not going to sway, I don't believe, what the Canucks do one bit. It's going to be the wins and losses on the ice, how good their coaching staff is, the trades, the good deals Benning's got, the bad deals Benning's got. Those are going to be the ultimate decider.
There's a certain amount of resolve every organization, whether it's sports or a business, should have, obviously, to tune out what your consumer base is saying to a certain degree, right? You want to take the positive and constructive criticism and augment and improve your product. But at the same time, you can't always listen to the majority. However, if there comes a stage where the majority is being disrespected or don't feel like they're being heard, and the results you are supposed to provide don't come to fruition also, at that stage, like, I'm not surprised something like this has developed where fans are intending to fly a plane because they haven't seen what they wanted to see. They haven't seen the cost of what's supposed to happen when teams don't win. And now they're finding their way to speak their mind. It's all fair game to me.
It's fair game, but it's also grandstanding. It is them trying to make the story about themselves as opposed to the team. And look at what we accomplished. We got a plane up in the air, and we had this groundswell of appointment. Listen, on the Dunbar Lumber text line, it's, you know, fans have a say with their wallet. Ownership cares about the bottom line. They do. And if they stop going, like they did back when the Canucks were really bad and people were in the stands, and the ownership's going to make a change. But the idea of these protests or the flying of planes, while I say A for creativity, you know, call me when the games are back and they're cheering in there and things are going good, because they can be as fickle as anyone and anything. It's just someone picks a side and decides to ride and die with that, and this person's really bad. And then in this case, you've got the other side almost 50-50 saying, no, we should do this for charity. I just find it almost just a waste of time, in my opinion, time, energy, and effort, when we could be spending it on other things.
Bick Nizar and Craig McEwen here on Bick and the Boss, Sportsnet 650. Still waiting to connect with Scott Brown. We'll see if we can patch up with him to do a little stat me up. But in the meantime, we got some submissions coming in. Oh, here we got Scott now from Fifth Avenue Real Estate. Scott, welcome to a beautiful day in Vancouver. Are you on the course again?
I thought you were going to ask that. Yeah, I'm on the third hole at the Falls.
What a life you have.
I do work.
What a life you have. That's awesome to be the million-dollar man. You know, like I want to do this show from the golf course.
We should hook you up. I'd do that.
Nice.
That's right. So when it stabbed me up, what is your number for today?
I'm going to go with 10. I can't believe I'm bringing this up, and I'm not trying to stir the pot. I guess I'm just going down memory lane, but it's 10 years ago, 2 days ago, that game one of the 2011 playoffs started versus the Blackhawks. The Dragon to be slayed was the 8 seed. Canucks were the 1 seed, of course. Luongo stopped all 32 shots. We won 2-0. Not complaining. I think I'm finally over 2011. But I can't believe it's a decade ago. I sure hope we don't wait a decade to feel that way again, minus the riot.
For sure. C-Mac, I'll let you go with your stat.
Well, I have two stats, actually, and one is a selfish, well, not too selfish, but a plug for my son, 23. Happy 23rd birthday to my son, Cole, who is celebrating today. But my real stat of the day is the number 46. Sidney Crosby last night scored a goal against the Flyers. He is now got 111 points in 75 games versus Philadelphia. And Crosby is now third on the list in the most goals scored against the Flyers in NHL history. Lemieux, Jágr, Crosby, Gartner, and Trotsche. A lot of Pens there and one Washington Capital who are in the top six on that list.
Ryan Dumoulin.
Nice job.
Crosby stick, able to push it forward. The attacking zone, let's hang inside out. He's trying to get the shot off. Jack, we have a rebound. Crosby, he scores. Sidney Crosby slams it home, and the Penguins with a 1-0 lead.
Look at the bench. The bench is going crazy because Crosby had to go get a stick off the bench. It was an incredible handoff. What a relay by the Penguins trainers. Brokus, who gave his stick up to Dumo, who had broken his stick. Dumo makes a play with Crosby's. Crosby goes to the bench, gets the handoff, and here he comes. Bingo.
That was a great moment last night, seeing that exchange there with the training staff and Sidney Crosby. So my stat, Scott, is actually be the same as yours. I'm also going with 10, but a different reason. If we have it here. Yep.
They had a 3-goal lead Monday night going into period three. They surrendered it. They lost it in overtime. It was a nightmare, to say the least. Hard practice yesterday, a positive attitude, and a total turnaround tonight. Win number one as a head coach for Don Granato, snapping this 18-game winless stretch. Their first victory in 19 as they surround Linus Ullmark. And a 6-1 win over the Philadelphia Flyers.
They eventually did get a win, but 10 points is the average number of points Buffalo and New Jersey got in their 19 games after their COVID stoppages. And the Canucks can be facing 19 games in 32 days. Let's see how it plays out for them. But that's sports stats. Scott, what do we got on the realty stats?
Well, BC, I could have done 23 because BC sales across the residential are up 123%. So 23% over 100. But I'm going to go in the million-dollar vein. $1,224,985. So current Vancouver MLS stats, that's the average price of a house. That much money. And they're selling right now in 14 days on average. But I always do this when somebody gets traded. It's bad news for the newest Canuck, who left a market where the average price of a Chicago premium downtown home is basically half the price of a home in Vancouver.
That's bad news?
It's bad news for the newest Canuck because it's going to cost them twice as much to live.
Right, I see. Yes, sorry. I thought you meant bad news
laughing.
For... Yeah, no. Yeah. It's great for Adam Godet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Scott Brown of Fifth Avenue Real Estate. Scott, get back to the courts and shoot well.
Yep, four. See ya.
Scott Brown of Fifth Avenue Real Estate. All right, getting back to the question we were posing earlier. Pick one athlete to have an injury-free career from beginning to end. Who are you choosing? Man, I have a pretty robust list myself because I couldn't narrow it down to just one guy or actually one girl on my list. But I'm choosing her. I'm going with Monica Seles.
Okay.
Because you remember that incident. Yep. That was in 93 on the court in Hamburg and stabbed in the back. And she recovered from her injury quite quickly, but she didn't return to play for, like, years. And she was winning major tournaments all the time, and she could have been one of the big stars. I think we missed out on a GOAT, and that, to me, is a big, big missed opportunity for the sports world. As we're going to talk about a bunch of other guys and athletes, I don't know how many of them could have been greatest of all times. And I look at her...
No, she could have. You're right. Yeah. And that was such a tragic event and really scary when you think about it, how never even would have thought someone would have come at anyone, let alone at a tennis match where it's not like it's rival soccer teams where we've had problems in the stands before, like a very, I'll say, civilized sport. And someone coming out of the stands and doing that when you're back to them, just absolutely crazy and blew me away. But to your point, she was awesome as a tennis player.
She was 19 years old, I think, or 20 years old when that happened, right? And already had majors. And you think of where and how long careers have spanned now. You know, Serena Williams has had an awesome career. Don't get me wrong. It just would the bar have been a bit harder for her to get to had someone like Monica Seles played for a whole extension of her career. It felt like we missed one. A great tennis star in that scenario.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Listen, I've got an international one as well. And we can go through your list because I when we talked about this beforehand, some of our people were the same, but mine would be Ronaldo. Ronaldo broke in at 17. He was on the World Cup team with Brazil in 94 and then, you know, had an awesome start to his pro career. But at the age of 23, he'd scored over 200 goals for club and country. However, the knee injuries and all that sort of stuff that hit him and how good of player he would have been. I mean, he was great as he was at the beginning, but as a footballer and you know, a shining light for Brazil, man, I just wonder what could have been had he not been dinged up, you know, at such a young age of 23.
I was seeing a lot of Mario Lemieux submissions coming in, and this is another one to me that's absolutely deserves to be mentioned because the interesting one, because the other name that got brought up a lot was Bobby Orr. But what's interesting to me is Bobby Orr is already regarded as best defenseman of all time.
Yeah.
And so if we're talking about, hey, we missed out on an injury career because it took away from something, there's really nowhere to go but up or but down for Bobby Orr. So as far as legacy, his legacy is kind of intact. It'd be for our just own entertainment of, boy, I wish I could have seen more of it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree on that. And on the Dunbar Lumber text line, a couple here for Eric Lindros, Brandon from Coquitlam. Think about how good he was until Scott Stevens decided to step into him a few times. And he you know, he had the concussion problems. He was a man child. And that was the biggest thing with Lindros is at the junior level, he could just skate over and around people. But at the NHL level, if you came in with your head down like he did and the rules set up the way they were, that was a recipe for disaster. But he could have been, you know, the other guy on the NHL front, Bick, and I think we agreed on this, was Peter Forsberg.
100%. Yeah.
And that guy, I mean, he had a great career, and I think he's fourth in assists or something. But I had covered a lot of hockey. I'd seen a lot of Avs games. I've seen, you know, him play
peak
quite
Canucks
a bit.
Canucks Avs time, right? Like, that would have been the best time to see him.
But it was what was striking to me was back in the day, and, you know, I gave a shout out to my son earlier. We were in Florida at Disney World, and we decided to go to Tampa Bay to watch the Lightning and Flyers play, and Forsberg was playing. And we got the tickets from John Garrett's daughter. Shout out to her. It was nice of her to set us up. And we were in the end zone, or behind the net, let's say, and just to the right. And I was watching Forsberg all his shifts, just kind of focusing in on him, which I had never really done from the press box. And he skated up the ice through the neutral zone, had the puck on his stick, was looking to attack. He left the puck for a few seconds, took two strides, stapled some guy to the boards. I don't even know who he was, but he decided he wanted to lay someone out with a body check, picked up the puck and kept skating in and created an offensive chance. I was like blown away. Like, this guy is a beast.
Yeah, it's... And what was also courageous too is he tried playing through it, and you can see how much desire there was to keep trying to play and keep pushing through and trying to find new skates that could form. And it just, it never really came off. And it's just like, oh man, it felt like we were robbed of a longer prime. It's same thing with Mario, right? It's for Mario to me, he could have been in that conversation with Gretzky if you look at some of the numbers, right? And even just what a prototype player is. Like, Wayne Gretzky's not a prototype center. He was just so special. But Mario is, like, the thick body, big guy. And it's like, that's what every GM and scout is looking for, that Joe Thornton build and that Mario type. Whereas as special as, you know, Wayne is, it was more done with his mind, whereas it's not as visual and obvious. But Mario is like, man, he could have pushed the conversation for greatest of all time. Keep your thoughts coming in, 650-650. Some Steven Stamkos love here coming in as well.
Yeah, Bo Jackson obviously was, I think, the one that got this started. But to your point about Lemieux, he almost looked lazy on the ice when you kind of watched him on TV because he'd float around and then he would score goals. But when you actually watched how quick he was for a big man and how skilled he was, my one Canuck moment, and we'll get to a Canuck player here in a second that we both have.
Yeah, there's one coming in,
There's one coming in. But I remember watching a game. Lemieux was in town, and I was sitting in the stands long before I got in the media. And for whatever reason, they decided to get Jim Sanlak to shadow Lemieux that night. Because I guess body type, size, and all that. And actually, Jim did a really good job of following around, kind of making life miserable. And you know how it is in the middle of a season and you're in Vancouver and Mario's probably not at the top of his game. And he just wanted to get rid of Sanlak, but he couldn't because the house was as big and as strong. Mario couldn't shrug him off. And it was one of those things where I was like, okay, well, if Mario can, you know, do that, like if Jim Sanlak can shut him out, how good is this guy? And then I got to see Mario in a game in Boston in the playoffs just years later, and how good he was and how powerful he was. And I realized, I guess, on that night, he wasn't really giving his best as Jim Sanlak was chasing him around the ice.
You can always tell the age of our listeners sometimes. A texter coming in. Ronaldo, he's from Portugal, isn't he? No. You want to go the other Ronaldo.
Yeah, not Cristiano Ronaldo, yes. No.
A name we're getting a lot, obviously, being in Vancouver, Pavel Bure.
Yes.
And yeah, for sure. Like the knee injuries took their toll, and it would have been interesting to see if he would have put up gaudy numbers before Ovechkin. And maybe Alex Ovechkin could be chasing Pavel Bure's record.
Hey, listen, I have a theory. And again, I have lots of them, as you know. But in Bure's case, you know, here's a guy who was doing off-ice workouts long before it was in vogue. His dad had him doing weights and plyometrics, and this guy really put on the muscle and the strength, and it was all about his power, and it helped him, and that's why he was the Russian Rocket and how quick he was. But I also think sometimes your frame or your body can only take so much torque and weight and muscle. And maybe because Bure just got a little bit too big, that's where he started to have problems, because his DNA or just his makeup wouldn't allow him to be as strong as he wanted to be by putting on all that extra strength.
No, I think that's valid. And man, it feels like I'm going to be nitpicky here when it comes to Alex Ovechkin, but there is a certain lumpiness to him. Like, obviously, he's very strong and very athletic, right?
Yeah.
But like, he's got that I like to call country strong.
Yes.
Ability, right? Where it's like, I don't think Alex Ovechkin needs to go to the gym to be like freakishly stronger than everyone. And I just think naturally he's going to be that way. Like Marshawn Lynch, similar thing, right? You just guys.
Bobby Hall was like that back in the day, apparently. Yeah.
Just country strong, and it just doesn't matter. And you look at Ovechkin, when we're talking about guys of careers we've missed out on because of injuries, it is remarkable just how durable he is. You look at his stats, and it's like every season is 75 and above, and you're just like, man, we've been very fortunate to AC his goal scoring, obviously, but also just how durable he has been. It's we should take more time to appreciate that. It's the same thing with LeBron too. in that sense. He's only recently had the one injury in his like age 35 or 34 season. But by and large, he's playing 75 plus games every single season. And we almost take it for granted that how great these guys are. It just gives us more time to nitpick. But Burray is a good one. I see this one coming in. Grant Hill and Penny Hardaway. Penny Hardaway is a big one for me. I thought could have been amazing.
I love those little Penny ads back in the day.
Look, I was a kid. I was a sucker, and I saw the Penny Hardaway and Chris Rock doing those ads, and little Penny,
phenomenal.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's like Penny. tell Kevin Garnett to sit high and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and he had the cell phone, which is a flip phone, and he's getting yelled at. He's like, Penny, I can't hear you. I'm going through a tunnel. You know, it was just, it was hilarious. Like, I thought those were so creative. On a local front, how about Adam Loewen? So the big stud pitcher, Jeff Francis and Adam Loewen, same draft class. I remember doing story after story about these two guys, and they couldn't have been more different. You know, Francis was more of these science geeky type, you know, academic who had a left-handed arm, which really worked well. Where Loewen was just a fireballer and kind of, let's say that he was Canadian, but that all-American guy, and he just threw just so fast and so sad to see him kind of go out the way he did and then try to resurrect his career as an out player, you know, and that just showed the talent that that kid had. But that was one that I wished we could have saw more of him.
I was going to say, I didn't think these texts were funny, but I'm going to read them just because so many have now come in. And apparently there's dozens of you that think this is funny. There's Country Strong, then there's Big Country Strong. And a lot of votes for Bryant Big Country Reeves. I am stunned how many texts we've got in from Bryant Big Country Reeves.
I tell you, like Gans, Oklahoma. remember when Big Country actually came in shape? Because that was always the thing. Man, if this guy came in shape, boy, he would be really good. And then he came in in shape and really didn't do much either. Like, nicest guy, you know, finding Big Country was a great documentary. I can see that. But I guess, in my opinion, that guy was never really destined to do a whole lot.
No. If he ever made an All-Star game, that would have been the highlight, basically. Not... don't feel like we missed out on anything as far as injuries derailing that career. Vic Nizar and Craig McHugh. We'll be back next week. I'll stick around for the People Show. It's going to be a busy, busy show. That hour, Yannick Hansen is going to be joining us. Adnan Virk, he's going to be joining us at 5 o'clock now of the WWE Network and NHL and MLB Network as well. The busiest man in sports. He joins us at 5 o'clock and Dave Pignota at 6 o'clock. All in the way, coming up here on the People Show. On the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.